The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, gamble wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Thursday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my well-dressed, dapper colleague and co-host, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we find a race where a nice guy doesn't finish last for a change. We're going to talk about one particular team that goes into Saturday with their defense in suspended animation. And the focus tonight is on a coach who believes revenge is a dish best served cold.
So, Dave, last night we had the World Series game rained out. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. But first, what's your first take on what you saw less than 24 hours ago?
Actually, my first take from yesterday is that $1 per oyster at P.J. Clark's for happy hours has got to be one of the best deals on the Las Vegas Strip. Let's tribute to them for that. That's an awfully sweet deal. While we were having those oysters, we saw something emerge in front of us that we really didn't expect. Yesterday's show, we talked about the struggles of the Pittsburgh offense, particularly the quarterback, Tino Sinceri, and how they hadn't been getting the ball to Ray Graham enough. Graham only got 2 carries last night before suffering a major injury. It all fell on Sinceri's shoulders, and he responded brilliantly. The best game of his career. 449 yards of total offense, 2 touchdown passes. He also ran for a touchdown. Sometimes it's when the adrenaline sets in. When you're not thinking too much and you simply have to perform, that we find out what a player is really about. Tip of the cap to P.J. Clark's for the oysters, an even bigger tip of the cap, or a tip of the helmet in this case, Tino Sinceri played awfully well. Teddy, what do you bring with you from Wednesday?
Well, real simple for me, Dave. What I bring with me? Baby puke.
Baby puke?
Yes, baby puke.
So Isaac watched the show yesterday and saw your Freddie Mercury, and that was the result?
It may well have been a bit of a residual effect for Isaac. Of course, for those of you who don't know, I became a first-time dad this past summer. Isaac, just a little over 4 months old. And I've gotten all the other stuff. He's taken a leak on me. He spit on me, all that kind of stuff. But last night, and if you have a kid, you understand, the end of the night when you're just getting ready to put the kid down, it's like the best part of the day. You know, a young guy goes down, you get to relax. I got my South Park DVR'd. I'm ready to just chill out in bed, watch South Park, go to sleep. Well, unfortunately, Isaac had different ideas for me, and I'm telling you, I got a full-on barf, face, chin, down the shirt, all over the couch, on the pants, all over him. We're talking about like a 45-minute cleanup at midnight last night, Dave. Not a lot of fun. First time that's happened, baby puke. Yeah, you know, that's our visual image for today's show. And with that, of course, let's transition over to Market Watch.
Yeah, because it flows just right, doesn't it? It just flows right in there.
Baby puke to Market Watch. It's a natural segue, you know, no question about it. But we're talking about the Game 6 matchup all over again in St. Louis. Or is it? There's one key factor for today's game, or tonight's game, I should say, that's a little bit different from yesterday. And that, of course, has to do with the weather forecast. Now, we talked about this on the show yesterday, how the chance of rain or the likelihood of rain in St. Louis could force both starters out of the equation early. That's no longer the case tonight. Let's take a look at that weather graphic real quick. Of course, yesterday was nothing but rain. Today, no rain forecast. We are talking about temperatures in the 40s by first pitch, so it's not going to be a real attractive night in St. Louis, but at least it's not going to rain tonight. And with those low temperatures, we've seen the side remain the same. We're still looking at St. Louis in that minus 115 range. But the 7.5s that we saw yesterday, Dave, those are all gone right now. We're looking at nothing but 7s in terms of totals for tonight.
Unfortunately, for a lot of you who are playing under 7.5 for this pitching matchup, you find out what happens when the guys behind the counter get to see your hole card. There was a lot of money played on the under 7.5. So when they have to reset the game, of course they know that money's out there. They're not going to let you back in play. I guess it's what you do on that side of the counter, though. There are people who go back and forth on this. Do you put the 7.5 out there, take those same bets again to be guaranteed action, or do you just put the 7 out there and chase that away? In this case, we're seeing it mostly being chased away. But as Teddy said, it's a different matchup now. When we had Texas as the play of the day yesterday, and we're already telling you now, that's not going to be repeated later on this show, it was based upon the idea that it was going to rain throughout the evening, that a line that was based upon Jaime Garcia, largely, the St. Louis starter, has got one of the biggest home-away disparities in Major League Baseball and was simply terrific in game number 2 against Texas from this mound. He was going to be a lesser factor last night than we expect him to be tonight. In game number 2, 7 full innings. Last night, the way that rain was projected, we didn't think he was going to get anywhere near 7. Now that he's back up to 7, we think this line should actually be a little bit higher than where it closed yesterday. Not enough to get you on St. Louis, but at this point, certainly enough to keep us away from Texas. Admittedly, though, the Texas bullpen, even fresher now, and that is an edge they carry into the late innings.
No question, Dave. And when we talk about the Rangers, we have to talk about Colby Lewis. As good as Garcia was in game number 2, Lewis was every bit as good. Yeah, he gave up the run while Garcia didn't. But the bottom line is 4 hits from Colby Lewis allowed in that ballgame. And we've seen similar starts from him throughout the course of the postseason. He had a dominant start against Tampa Bay. Similar story last year where he was as good as any Ranger starter this side of C.J. Wilson throughout their postseason run. 4 quality starts in the postseason for Lewis a year ago. So he's one pitcher that it's a little bit difficult for me to bet against right now, Dave. He's in really good current form.
Yeah, what Lewis has done by performing well in the playoffs at different venues, it shows that he's got that ability to settle into the situation. We expect him to pitch pretty well again tonight. Tonight's going to be great watching. If you have a series play, of course, you want it to go 7. But even as a fan, you want to see it go 7. And let's see Ron Washington's decision for Friday night. He's talked about the fact that it's going to be Harrison tomorrow, not Holland, despite the fact that Holland was so very, very good against the Cardinals the last time out. It'll be interesting if they lose tonight and you feel that pressure. Okay, now it is sudden death, that maybe do you go to the guy that pitched a little bit better or do you stick inside of your rotation? His plan right now, I start Harrison, and oh, by the way, Holland's available. The first sign of trouble, the problem is in a game 7, the first sign of trouble, and it could already be too late.
Yeah, the problem is I don't think that the world is capable of watching Derek Holland's mustache for a second consecutive or twice in the same week. You guys want to make fun of me for my Freddie Mercury stuff. Holland's mustache, man, that's way worse than any singing that I could do, isn't it?
No.
Not even close. Bottom line, we're looking for your contributions to the show. We value your input. And, man, we don't want some feedback. Send us emails. Every day we're going to answer on air, sportsday@covers.com. Again, here's that toll-free listener rant line. 866-966-4599. We're looking for crazy rants to play on air. And, of course, you can get involved right now in the Covers.com community. Active threads and discussions right now in the Covers.com/posting forums. When we come back, it's time for Postmortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name on my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical masks on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
One of the more surprising things we saw this week in college football was a contract extension that I don't think anyone saw coming. Minnesota extending Jerry Kill's contract through the end of the 2017 season. And this, of course, came despite the fact that Minnesota lost to New Mexico State at home. They opened 0-3 in Big Ten play, and they were outscored in those three Big Ten games by a combined count of 144-31. Times are bad for the Golden Gophers right now, and Jerry Kill probably summed up the problems best with this quote. Quote, the situation that we are in, and I'm not blaming anybody, is just the situation that we are in. And we have some things that we've got to get corrected. I think that coming in, there were more things that I thought, and even probably Joel Maturi, the athletic director for Minnesota, thought. There were some things in here that are going to take time. So Kill preaching patience after the contract extension, but someone's got to be seeing the light at the end of the tunnel here. Is there actually something to like with these scoreboard results as bad as they are?
Nothing to like at all. So you're wondering, why the contract extension? Give me a couple of aspects to this. First, go back and do your adjustments. Teddy told you what the scores were of those first three Big Ten games. Throw those out and put this in instead. At halftime of those first three, they were down 103-3. Down 100 points in just the first two quarters of play over those three games. It's in the second half, where it was only 41-28, that we saw opponents letting up on them because it was so easy. So one of the things we do here in the postmortem a lot is tell you when those final scores are not representative of how good or how bad a team is. In this case, how bad Minnesota is. The quote from Kill, I think, really touches on what happened this week. They're saying, you know what, this is a disaster right now. We need to do something that gives us a foundation to go forward. So what do they have coming up off of those three disasters? Iowa this week, a team playing with revenge from a loss to Minnesota last year that will take them seriously. The next 2 weeks, Wisconsin and Michigan State, the two best teams in the Big Ten. I think what they did is a distraction. It's almost like it's waving a white flag saying, boy, we're going to get crushed the next couple of weeks. But it's okay that we get crushed. Here's your extension. It's bad. We're going to slowly build. And what they did is they actually took pressure off of the coach and off the players to feel compelled to have to perform well. These next couple of weeks for Minnesota may be very, very ugly. This is their way of saying ugly's okay. And when a school does that, that tells you how bad they fear what is about to happen. We didn't see any Philadelphia defenders chasing offensive guys from behind this past Sunday. It was the first time all year we didn't see it because they didn't play. When they have played, boy, it's been an ugly opening to the season. The wide nine defensive schemes of Juan Castillo allowing 7.7 yards per pass, 4.8 yards per rush. It's a big reason why the Eagles have opened 2-4. Okay, we didn't see him last week. There was just a little bit of a window of a bye. Has anything changed to lead us to believe those numbers will not continue at that same ugly rate?
Actually, Dave, something has changed for Philadelphia in their favor throughout the course of the bye week. Now, the Eagles had a plan coming into the season with this wide nine defense. I know it's an offensive line coach trying to design a new defense for the first time, but the bottom line was that Philly did have a plan for those ball games. The wide nine defense sets the defensive ends about 3 feet, about a yard further out on either side. Now, it does make a defense a little bit more vulnerable to the run, but with the combination of their speed pass rushers on the outside and their shutdown cornerbacks, the Eagles thought coming into the season that their defense was going to be dominant against the pass. That would help them sell out a little bit and stop the run. Obviously, that hasn't been the case, and the biggest issue so far has been injuries for Philadelphia on that defensive line. They had to use undersized defensive lineman Jason Babin. He's having a great season, 7 sacks already. They had to use him for 95 snaps over the past 2 weeks. That's 90 snaps out of 116 defensive plays. And this, of course, is from a defense where defensive line coach Jim Washburn said prior to the season that he was hoping to keep his pass rushers down to 35 snaps per game. So, obviously, the injury situation has affected Philadelphia's depth on the defensive line, which has therefore affected their performance. But so far this week, we've seen Trent Cole work his way back into the mix. He's been injured. Ajuqua Parker also working his way back into the mix. And Antonio Dixon, not healthy yet, but he may well get there in the not too distant future. So a couple of key bodies coming back into play for Philadelphia. We also saw some tweaks to the wide nine that really helped the Eagles have their best defensive performance against the run all year 2 weeks ago when they snapped their losing streak with a win over the Washington Redskins. So this Eagles defense may not be suddenly a great defense, but you know what? When you start looking at the stats from the first 6 weeks of the season, those stats may already be completely stale.
When we come back, yes, one more hedge question. And guys, be careful. Jacob is watching you. And then we're going to go inside the numbers. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, let's answer some viewer emails. And today we have one really good one that I want to get into and have a little discussion back and forth. You can also, of course, get involved in the forums. Kush J put up a great post in the hour before we went live, the hour before tip-off, kick-off, whatever you want to call it for the show. It's a great question. We're going to answer that tomorrow because it ties into other stuff we're looking to do on Friday's show. But let's start with the letter from Mike in Canada. Hey, Teddy and Prof. On Saturday, I had a six-game 1K parlay come down to Washington State minus 2.5 for the parlay win. All the other five games were finished before the game started, so I hedged the parlay and put $5.50 on Oregon State plus 3. Do you think this is the right thing to do, or do you think I should have just let the parlay roll? In hindsight, my hedge looks good because I still came out up units, but what do you guys think, in general, is the best course of action in this situation?
A couple things come to mind. You'll know part of the answer if you watch yesterday's show. But now the first part, when we look at the way the question was phrased, I had a six-game 1K parlay. Mike, if you've got a book that'll take a dime on a 16 parlay, send me a private message. We'd be really curious to see that. I think what you might be seeing is you had a chance to win $1,000 on a 16 parlay. Not many books, Teddy, do we know, are going to take $1,000 on a six-teamer. That's a pretty good chunk. Anyway, when we go back to the idea of the hedge, there's only one question here. Is Oregon State plus 3 a good bet or not? The rest of it, no, doesn't matter. I'm 5 for 5 on a parlay. Doesn't matter. You've only got one decision to make. Should I bet this team plus 3 or not? Again, you want every bet you make to be of a positive expectation. Now, it's a different story if you say, you know, I got to pay the rent Monday, so I have to win one bet or the other. Or I've got to take my girlfriend out tomorrow. Have to win one bet or the other. But if it's just a betting standpoint, no. Is Oregon State plus 3 a positive expectation bet? That's the only question here. It has no relevance that you've got a five-teamer heading up to that game.
When I first moved to Las Vegas in 1998, the prevailing conventional wisdom was that parlays were sucker bets, that the pros didn't get involved with parlays. And I don't think I made a parlay bet the first few years that I was in town. Gradually, my opinion started to change, and the bottom line was that there were advantages with parlays in terms of correlation, when side and total were in some ways correlated. The books didn't always recognize that. Similarly, when we talk about making a parlay like that, where you're betting all the games at the same book, you better be darn sure that you're getting the best numbers on those teams at the same book and making that parlay bet at the appropriate time. But my good friend Steve Fezzik, back-to-back winner of the Hilton contest, he gave me some very, very strong advice when it came to parlays just a few years ago. And Steve is a guy who's done phenomenally well as a sports bettor here in Las Vegas. And he basically said, hey, if you're going to hedge off your parlay, if you have a six-teamer and you're going to hedge off it, you're an idiot. You should have just bet a five-teamer to begin with. Similarly, in this spot, yeah, it worked out for you. But if you didn't want to bet a six-teamer, there's no reason to bet a six-teamer. When you hedge off that bet, that's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame that we don't have the ability to take a parlay like that and put it up on eBay and say, okay, guys, here's what I have. I got a 5-team parlay. Here's what it's worth. There's only one game left to be played. What would you offer me for it? Then you'll find out the advantage that you really have going into that bet. And you won't consider the fact that, oh, I need to hedge something. No. Is the sixth bet one you don't like anymore? Did you put a game in and say, well, I liked it early in the week. I don't like it anymore. If that's the case, then you do have a hedge situation because you don't expect to win. Then that comes into play. But if you thought it was a good bet when you made it, and if you think it's still a good bet, forget the hedge notion. All you may be doing is just making an individual bad bet, and those add up over time.
Although one thing we have to give you credit for, no question about this, is that you laid 2.5 in your parlay and you took +3 on your hedge. And that's a good combination of wagers to have. Anytime you're laying 2.5 and taking 3, you're putting yourself in a positive expectation situation. Remember, keep those emails coming. That email address one more time, sportsday@covers.com. Every day we're going to answer those questions on air. But right now, it's time to shift focus and let's go deep inside the numbers.
So many times in this segment, we talk about point spread records or little patterns that we can take advantage of. But we also want you to focus a lot on straight up records and what they can mean for you going forward. Keep in mind that straight up is what the teams are playing for. The point spreads are arbitrary. They get decided by reasons that sometimes have nothing to do with the intent of the teams. But straight up can tell you an awful lot because now there's an integrity factor built in. And it's also the absolute performance of the team. Again, it's not someone sitting behind a counter with power ratings arbitrarily setting a point. Good case in point this week when Wisconsin goes to Ohio State. You're going to look at the point spread, see Wisconsin 7, even some 7.5s out there, which based on this year's power ratings might make a little bit of sense. Although as we mentioned last week on the show, those Wisconsin power ratings may be just a little bit high based on the schedule. But here's what we want you to do. Let's put that line in perspective. When we go inside the numbers today, let's talk about what really happens in Ohio State home games at the Horseshoe in Columbus. Going back the last 10 years, Ohio State is 63-6 straight up in this stadium. How many times did they lose by more than 7 points? Once. In other words, if you can find that 7.5 out there this week, Ohio State would be 68-1 in that particular setting. That tells you a little perspective on how this line might have been stretched a bit too far.
Yeah, no doubt. A 68-1 angle, certainly something worth considering. When we come back, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Now it's time for our Insider Six-Pack, as I continue to do maybe the worst sound effect in all of show business, but I'm going to keep doing it until we get a real one. So bottom line, 6 tidbits of knowledge for you for the upcoming football weekend. Let's start with the world's largest cocktail party in Jacksonville this weekend as Georgia and Florida battle. It's looking more and more apparent that Florida quarterback John Brantley is going to be healthy enough to go for the Gators this week. They obviously did not perform well on the offensive side of the football in 2 games without him prior to their bye. So Brantley should be good to go. But the bad news for Florida is that a Georgia defense that has been pretty darn good this season, well, it looks like they're going to get a little bit better. 2 key cogs back in the lineup for the Georgia Bulldogs, both at the linebacker position. Alec Ogletree, he hasn't played since breaking his foot against Boise in week 1. Here's a guy with NFL upside. You'll see him on an NFL roster in the not-too-distant future. He's going to be back for the Bulldogs this week. And it also coincides with the return of outside linebacker Cornelius Washington. He's an excellent pass rusher. He's been suspended for the last couple of games for Georgia. So, Charlie Weiss, a couple of guys that he's going to have to devise a game plan for. Weiss, the offensive coordinator for the Gators, has obviously never been the OC in the world's largest cocktail party yet. Right now, the early money has come on Georgia. The Bulldogs -3 total of 49.
Earlier this week, in a postmortem, we talked about the idea of bubble burst teams. Those that are undefeated late in the season that suffer the first loss and have a difficult time finding motivation in their next game. But we may have a little changing of our opinion when Oklahoma goes to Kansas State this week. Something Bill Snyder and the Wildcats have done may have actually kicked a sleeping dog and brought it back to life with a lot of bark. Every year when Kansas plays Kansas State, the winner gets the Governor's Cup. Kansas State usually wins that under Snyder. And they put it prominently in their trophy case. But what's sitting in the trophy case this week instead of that? The 2003 Big 12 Championship Trophy. If you remember back to that one, maybe the greatest single game of Snyder's career, Oklahoma undefeated, ranked number one in the country coming in, just got slaughtered 35-7 by Kansas State in that game. But in putting that trophy there, to try to remind your players, hey, we upset Oklahoma once, we can do it again, have you instead given Oklahoma a little bit of incentive that may not have been there? Instead of the Sooners being flat this week, that may have been a splash of cold water on their face that creates a different attitude come kickoff.
Let's clear up some of the mess last week that we saw at the end of the first half in that UCLA-Arizona game, a game that was already decided by halftime and a game that featured a fair bit of fisticuffs between the two squads that have resulted in a number of suspensions. For Arizona, most notably, we're talking about starting cornerback Shaquille Richardson and nickelback Jordan Grandin, both going to be gone for the entire game. They're also going to be without a cornerback Mark Watley, who's Richardson's primary backup, plus reserve safety Lyle Brown. So that's four key members of the Arizona secondary going to be out for this week, and yet the Wildcats have already taken a ton of money. This game opened as high as with Arizona as high as plus +8 in some locations, now down to that plus +4, plus +4.5 range for the Wildcats as they travel to Washington. Bettors think that these injuries may not matter quite as much as they do, but the bottom line is this is a secondary that's already lost Jonathan McKnight and Adam Hall for the season, and that means that true freshman Tremaine Bondurant and Cortez Johnson going to be forced into play for at least the first half of this ball game. If you have a book that deals props for this late night TV game, you may want to take a look at some pro Washington props, certainly some pro offensive Washington props in this ballgame. Washington quarterback Keith Prince, he beat me once this year when I had a big play on Cal, and Prince was brilliant in that ballgame. He's been pretty much brilliant all the way through. Price, I should say. 1,713 yards for the season, 22 touchdowns already with only 5 INTs.
Go to the flip side of that little fiasco in Arizona last week. UCLA comes away with more bruised psyche on the suspension front. Not too many things major for them. Defensive tackle Cassius Marsh, he's going to miss the full game. He's a starter. Offensive lineman Alberto Cid, he's a starter. He's going to miss the first half. Four other wide receivers suspended. They were just reserves. They got out there and involved in that scuffle. The problem for UCLA, as we said, is more mental than physical right now. It doesn't look like there's anything available on their schedule the rest of the way that can keep Rick Neuheisel in his job. Even a clean sweep and a win over Southern Cal is probably not going to be enough.
A clean sweep? A clean sweep might keep Neuheisel. If you can beat USC, maybe probably not. You're right, Dave. But the bottom line, let's shift to the NFL and take a look at Sam Bradford. We reported, it was last Friday, I believe it was, we reported that Bradford was walking around. It looked like he was at least a decent shot of playing in the game against Dallas. Well, the high ankle sprain seems to have gotten worse. You know, he did practice last Friday, hasn't practiced since. Obviously, the backup, A.J. Feely, did not perform particularly well against the Cowboys. He had a QB rating of about 61 in that ball game. And Steve Spagnuolo, the Rams head coach, saying this about Sam Bradford, quote, "We're not going to put weight on it or do any bouncing around until it feels right. When we get to that point, we'll let you know." So could it be an 0-6 start? And plus, the emergence of San Francisco as the NFC West clear favorite that is making the Rams think that this season's something of a lost cause. Maybe we're going to see this Sam Bradford absence extend onwards and onwards as the Rams not looking to put their QB in a situation, their franchise QB in a situation where he could re-aggravate that injury and or make a bad season even worse.
One team that does have a sense of injury, or a sense of urgency, Not that easy. We're going to put them in the same sentence.
Hey, the over-under on mistakes we're going to make in this program has got to be, what, about 6.5? This is a live show. This is a live show. And we don't have cue cards, and I'm not allowed to read everything, and neither are you.
We already paid the over. If it was 6.5, we paid that during the last break. You might have missed that.
But the bottom line is that, yeah, over under 6.5 on a daily show is likely to be realistic. But, you know, mispronunciations are going to happen. You know, relax, Dave. What'd you say? Injury?
And extended interruptions are also going to happen. We have an injury and an urgency with Houston. They'd like to have Andre Johnson back. Looks like it's probably not going to happen this week. Let's quote from Johnson directly after yesterday's practice. I wouldn't say I feel great. I didn't feel how I expected I would feel. We just keep taking it one day at a time. You really can't gauge it because at times when I run, I still have some tugging and stuff on my leg. Now you might think, oh, what's the big deal? They just had 29 first downs and 518 yards in that easy win against Tennessee. Take a closer look. Only 75 of those 518 yards came from wide receivers. There's still a weakness there without Johnson. They had lost back-to-back games before the Tennessee win. They can get away without him this week, but they're going to need him back if they're going to make a serious run at the playoffs.
When we come back, we're still not going to have cue cards. We're still not going to have all of our lines memorized, but we are going to have money time.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Okay, guys, let's put all of this information to use, to all this information to work for you. It's money time! As Dean Martin once sang, and Dave made me listen to before the show, it's time to go to Houston. Or what did he say? Something like that. Let's go to Houston? That's going to be in my head all day. You can sing it for us, Dave, can't you?
I'm not going to sing it for you, but you weren't even close. Not even close.
Let's go to Houston.
Guys. We're really, really, really sorry about this. We promise to never do it again.
No, we don't. I imagine we're going to do it on a daily basis. But let's go to Houston tonight. The Houston Cougars -27.5. Over under 70.5, and frankly, those 27.5s, they're getting bought out as we speak, Dave. This line was moving up to 28. The Cougars going to have to win by more than four touchdowns if they're going to cover the closing point spread.
We can understand where this money's coming from, but we're not necessarily sure we agree with it. It's one of your big issues in revenge games, in that you can get your revenge, be satisfied with it, long before the point spread has been reached. Where does revenge come into play? Last year, Rice wins the game 34-31. They get the Bayou bucket, and David Bailiff, the coach, talks about what that means for the program. He says, it's incredible when you do win it. Normally, I'm the last one to leave here on Saturdays, except when you win the bucket. They're in there taking pictures with it, taking individual pictures with it, group pictures, acting like they are drinking from it. It's one in which they celebrate it by taking it around on campus. It's important. It's a great traveling trophy. It's a great tradition. Now, keep in mind, when you do that at Rice, you're just a few blocks away across town from the Houston kids that you beat. And it means Houston, a team that's accustomed to dominating this series. 2 years ago, 59-0 at halftime, 73-14 final score. They're used to dominating. Now, all of a sudden, the upstarts for 12 months have had bragging rights. That does kick in a little motivation, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does. But the bottom line is last year, Houston was playing without Case Keenum, who's turned out to be a pretty darn good quarterback for the Cougars. Again, this is a Houston team that's still undefeated. They're only ranked number 17 in the BCS standings, in large part because they faced a relatively even slate, a relatively easy slate, I should say. But the bottom line for the Cougars, this offense is dynamite. We're talking about, as you mentioned, Dave, 59-0 at halftime the last time these two teams played on this field. The Rice defense, not necessarily good, and Case Keenum, he's thrown for already 2,685 yards, 73% of his passes. He has a 23-2 touchdown to interception ratio. Is it possible the Houston Cougars could score on every possession? Certainly, while the game is still in hand, I think that it might be.
The last time we saw Keenan against this defense, that's what happened in that first half. They scored on every possession. Here's David Bailiff talking about how difficult the matchup is for his team. When you put the video on, immediately what came to mind offensively is that when those guys played tag, you're it as kids, They were never it because nobody can catch them. He knows the difficulty he's up against. Houston playing for several different things. Keenum with 5 touchdown passes tonight sets the all-time NCAA record. And Houston as a team believes they've got a shot at 8,000 yards this year, which would also be a record. So they're playing for a lot of things that can get points on the board. But are those points enough to cover a spread this high? If they're up 24 late in the game, they're happy. But if you're laying the points, you're not.
Oh, most assuredly. And the biggest issue right now we have with laying this price with Houston is their defense. Because while the offense is very good, the defense is not for this Houston Cougars team. They've allowed 4 of their 7 Division 1A opponents, or FBS opponents, to have their best offensive game of the season against this defense. In my mind, laying 4 touchdowns with any team that doesn't have a quality defense that's likely to get stops in the fourth quarter with the points right on the line is something of a concern here. So sidewise, probably not going to get involved in this one. If I'm going to do anything, Dave, I'll take a look at the total.
Let's go to Miami, where revenge is also in play. Current line, Miami minus 14, 48.5. Bitter memory, you would think, for the Hurricanes last year. You'll see 24-19 as the final score. They lost in Charlottesville, Virginia. Wasn't quite that way. They were down 24-0 going into the fourth quarter. Starting quarterback Jacoby Harris knocked out of that game by the Virginia defense. So is revenge the prime thing on the minds of the Hurricanes? The players, perhaps, but maybe not Al Golden?
No, here's a quote from Al Golden that speaks volumes about the revenge motif or lack thereof from the Miami Hurricanes tonight. Golden, quote, "I'm not a revenge guy. I don't believe in it. I'm a process guy. The only thing that endures is a process. Everything else makes you go high and low, develops these oscillations in your program. I don't believe it. I really don't." Now, first, let's give kudos to Golden for using a nice SAT word there, oscillations. Well done. But the bottom line for this Miami Hurricanes team, while revenge may not be the motive, Miami sitting with 3 losses so far this year. All 3 of those losses came in absolute coin flip games. We remember the opener, the national TV game at Maryland with all the suspensions. Miami still in position to win that game despite a pick 6 before halftime. Oh, then they threw another pick 6 right at the end of the ballgame, allowed Maryland to not only win but cover. Miami was right in it. It was the same story against Kansas State, the loss they suffered against the Wildcats. Anybody's game, coin flip, Miami came on the wrong end. And, of course, the loss to Virginia Tech, where the Hurricanes scored on 5 consecutive drives, 4 of them in the second half, at Virginia Tech, but couldn't get a stop on the Hokies on the very last drive of the ballgame. The bottom line is we're getting Miami team that's sitting 4-3 right now. They could just as easily be 7-0.
We like that quote from Al Golden because he uses the word process twice. And it's been about the process at Miami this year. Let's look at a couple of key things that Golden wanted to rectify and what he's already done in his first season with it formerly had been a very undisciplined team. Let's look at a turnover margin. Number 104 in the nation last year, all the way up to number 50. Harris, who had a difficulty with interceptions throughout his career, only 1 in the last 4 games. And more important than anything else, penalties. Number 117 last year out of 120 teams, they've narrowed that down to number 16 this time around. Only 24 penalty yards in the last 2 games. The process is in place.
We've got some changes on the Virginia side of the equation for this week's game. It's been kind of a dual QB situation for the Cavaliers throughout the course of the season. Well, this week, Mike London has made it very clear it's Michael Rocco's job to lose. He's going to get the start. He's expected to play the whole way instead of having a QB rotation for the Cavaliers. And frankly, if you watch either one of these 2 quarterbacks play so far this year, both leave something to be desired. Rocco at least now getting all the snaps with the first stringers for the Cavs. But, you know, this is a Virginia team that blew a big lead on the road at Indiana back in September. And, oh, by the way, they haven't played away from home in more than a month. They've had a nice 4-game homestand with a bye in the middle. And at the end of that homestand, a Virginia team that was hoping to be in position to clinch a bowl berth. It doesn't look like that's going to happen again this year for Mike London and company.
So let's start setting this one up. A team that doesn't have a good quarterback rotation, hasn't been on the road in over a month, now has to travel on a short week. And I think that's one reason why they made that quarterback decision. We can't afford to split practice time when we've only got a couple of days. Teddy, Virginia looks vulnerable tonight. Are they vulnerable enough for
the play of the day? Yes, I think they are vulnerable for the play of the day. This is an undervalued Miami team, and it's a Virginia team with some real issues. So, Vegas Sports Day play of the day for Thursday, we're going to take the Miami Hurricanes minus the 14. There were 13.5s out there earlier. Unfortunately, those have all been bought up in the last hour before we went on air. But you may want to shop around. They may pop up again at some point between now and kickoff. Bottom line, Vegas Sports Day play of the day, Miami minus the points. And that's going to wrap it up for the Thursday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.